Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and it's the good old days. I'm joined by my co-host, Cody Thompson. It's just the two of us today. We love our other co-hosts, but we're going back skeleton crew today, just me and you, Cody. How are you doing?
I actually was going to say the same thing, Pat, when before you said it. It was like, they used to just let us in a room and let us record our own thing, and then we'd show it to them after it was done. So the fact that we have all this supervision now, it's different. It's better, but it is fun to get back to just you and me. That's great. Yep.
Back to basics today. All righty. Hey, what are we going to talk about today, Cody?
This is going to be back to the basics again. We're going to talk about artificial harmony.
Yeah. Something that is... we've talked about before, but I really want to take another approach to this because I am more convinced than ever that artificial harmony is extremely dangerous. And it's one thing to understand it intellectually. It's another thing to embrace it in our behaviors. And we want to talk today about why we should be deathly afraid of artificial harmony in our organizations.
I think that I love this topic, Pat, because oftentimes we'll get on here and we'll say, hey, conflict is good. You need to have more conflict. And so we're pushing people to have more uncomfortable conversations, but we don't just sit here and think about the absence of that and talk about how dangerous it is, just the artificial harmony side of this. So it's like one thing that's like, oh, we could positively go out there and let's have more conflict. It's a whole other thing to say, hey, there are real ramifications if you choose not to do that.
Exactly. That's a great, I didn't even think about that. That's a great way to look at it. Let's scare people with the downside of avoiding conflict, of being too nice, too happy, too affirming at all of our meetings. Really bad things can happen. And so rather than talking about the good, the upside of conflict, let's talk about the downside of avoiding it. And to do that, I think I'll set the kind of stage with the conflict continuum. Does that make sense, Cody?
Yeah. I was just going to ask you to do that. Go for it.
So imagine... I'm holding my hands up now in this non-video world of a podcast. Yes, we still don't do video. And at either end of this line that's between my two hands is different levels of conflict. On one end is what we call harsh, mean-spirited attacks, where we're at each other's throat and we hate each other. Okay, that's terrible, right? But at the other end of that line is what we call artificial harmony, where everybody's smiling and nodding and avoiding any conflict. Okay, most organizations we work with, certainly nonprofits and churches, are at the artificial harmony end. You go to meetings and everybody smiles, they nods, everybody's positive, and yay, we had a great meeting. And we're not having enough conflict. Now, what we need to do is we need to get away from that end of the line where it's artificial harmony and move closer and closer toward the bad end. Well, what we're doing is we're having a little bit more constructive conflict and a little bit more and a little bit more. We get to this point toward the middle of the line between my two hands here, where it crosses over from constructive conflict to slightly destructive. And then it gets more destructive and more destructive till it gets to the other end, the horrible end. Well, the place we're supposed to be is right next to the middle, where we're having all the good, positive, constructive conflict possible without stepping over the line. Now, occasionally we have to step over the line and say, hey, I'm sorry, I was a little harsh there, or I'm sorry that got that way. But we have to have the courage to have all the constructive conflict possible. And when we cling to the end of the pool, that's where artificial harmony is, really, really bad things happen. And Cody, one of the things I like to say is, when we fail to have conflict around ideological issues, when we disagree on things, eventually ferments into conflict around people. And that's how we crush human beings. And it's why churches are where sometimes people get hurt more than any other organizations, because they're nice, they're nice, they're nice, they're nice, and then they crush somebody.
Yeah. I've actually quoted that line from you probably as much as any other line, that when you don't have conflict around ideas, that it ferments into conflict around people. Because if you're not willing to stay in the middle of that conflict continuum and have all the amount of productive conflict you can, you know, we often think of when it goes across the line in the bad direction, Pat, people flee from that side. If you have a little bit of mean-spirited personal attack, they start to feel that right away and they run the other way. Well, we don't do it the opposite, where if you're on a team or you're in an organization or even at a meeting and you're seeing it slip onto the artificial harmony side, people just silently let you go further and further down that side of the line. So it's interesting that we have this idea that, oh boy, if we get too much, even an inch or a couple inches across the line on the mean-spirited personal attack, we'll retreat, but we will just slide as much as we can down the artificial harmony line.
You know what's so interesting? It reminds me of this concept of theological conversation around sin. And there's sins of commission, which means when we do something bad. But then there's sins of omission when we don't do something good. And most times we run away from sins of commission. That's good. Like, oh no, that would be a bad thing to do. But we're a lot more comfortable doing nothing. And yet it can be just as dangerous, just as bad to do that. But so we're not afraid of artificial harmony. And I think it's because people portray it as though it's a virtue. They think that being nice is virtuous when in fact, and I like to be, you can't really underestimate this. Being nice when you don't mean it is cruel, and it's really where politics begins. When you're nice, but you don't really mean what you're saying, but you're saying it anyway, there's an element of cruelty to that, which I think we have to fully appreciate if we're going to avoid this.
And sometimes I think a story is helpful, Pat, because that, I think that goes back to the conflict fermenting around the person, if you don't have it about ideas. And you tell a great story in your speeches when you're up on stage, and you'll say, you know, you portray this in a church environment because they're obviously have this culture of niceness, but that there's a woman, if you're having a, you're planning a festival or a 100-year celebration of your church, and a woman throws out an idea, someone who's been on the board for years, and says, I think we should have a festival of balloons. You'd kind of do this comical idea that she throws out a festival of balloons as a celebration. And I love the depiction, the way you tell the story, because you say, oh, and rather than tell her, hey, I don't think we're going to have a festival of balloons, you say, oh, okay, great, we'll consider that. And you write that down. And then instead of telling her that that idea is bad, you then go to the parking lot with me, Pat, and you go, can you believe that suggestion? She's kind of a dingbat. And I love that because that is exactly what happens. And so many people think it's so much nicer in the moment to not say, I don't know if that's a great idea. And instead they'll go into the parking lot, and then it becomes about that person's character and not the idea itself.
Exactly. It's like, well, I don't want to have to be there while she hears this disappointing news. So I'll go out and actually make it even worse. But as long as she's not there to hear it, it's okay. And eventually she finds out what people think of her, and we crush her spirit.
Yeah.
But, and it's really kind of selfish, because let her down and to say, hey, Shirley, I don't know if that's a great idea. Maybe you should explain a little bit more, but I don't think that's really going to work. And instead we nod our head and smile and say, thank you, Shirley. And that's just gross. I think that's the most technical term for it. It's gross.
You and I have now had, you know, almost a decade of experience having conflict, not just with each other, but with our team members and mining for conflict in the room and all the things that we do to try to bring that to the surface. And I think one of the reasons that we talk about this so often is, like you said, the culture of work rests almost squarely on the other side of that pendulum, right? Is the artificial harmony side.
Right.
We're trying to push people more to the middle. And I think what's interesting is it does feel a bit like letting some air out of the balloon. If you don't have any conflict for 10 meetings, and then all of a sudden now it's built up, it feels like the balloon is going to pop in that 10th meeting. But if you do what we just described in that first meeting, which is Shirley, you know, talks about the festival of balloons, and you just very calmly say, hey, I don't know if that's a great idea, it doesn't then become so big that it's hard to overcome. We let air out of the balloon all the time, and then there's not enough air in the balloon for it to really pop.
Exactly. So it's about getting into the habit of doing that. And here's some tips around what we need to do. And I think it's like, if you're going to a meeting, and if you're having more than one meeting in a row, two meetings in a row, where people are never saying things like, oh gosh, I'm kind of frustrated, or that disappoints me, or man, I kind of feel crazy here. This doesn't make sense to me. And if there's no minor angst or frustration or disagreement, there's a really good chance that not everything is being said, because any two human beings, any three, four people sitting down to figure things out are going to experience some frustration. And so if your meetings are all smiles and people are like, yeah, way to go, and it's all kind of cheery, that is a really bad sign. And so what we have to do is, as leaders, we have to constantly mine for conflict, because here's what happens. I think that we set ourselves up on our teams for what I would call institutional or environmental gaslighting. So you're sitting in a meeting of five people and everybody's, yeah, encouraging each other, smiling. Yeah, nobody's disagreeing. Well, when we hear something that we don't like at the meeting, what we do is we think, I must be the only one. I must be in the minority around this opinion. So if I'm the only one, man, I must be the crazy one. I won't say anything. When in fact, what we are is we're in the minority of people who want to disagree. And so what we often do, and Cody, I want you to talk about something you mentioned right before the podcast started. We don't want to leave people being in the minority and to be the one who constantly has to speak up.
Yeah. I think we were reflecting on this idea of conflict, and some people play it off like, well, I'm just not comfortable with that, or that's not how I grew up, or that's not a style that I agree with. And so what often happens is there is one person on a team member who might be more willing more often to say the contentious thing or get into a little bit of conflict. And so what tends to happen is in the hallway or at the water cooler, someone who's adverse to conflict will say, well, I don't really love that idea. Maybe you could tell them in the next meeting. And they're right. Imposing the weight of that and the suffering of that on one person, because it is a culture, Pat, like the members of the team make up the culture of the team in those meetings. But there's often one person that, you know, probably everybody listening to this is like, oh, I knew a guy or a gal on one of my teams who was kind of the scapegoat for all of the unpopular opinions there. And everybody gave them their opinions to voice during those meetings.
Yeah. It just reminded me of something, Cody. If you're one of those people who has really high standards and wants the conflict and wants to have the right decision made, and you're working with a bunch of people who nobody else wants to do that, you're not going to want to work there anymore. Because it's like the burden and the cost of doing that is too high. And I think that's why many nonprofits and churches lose excellent volunteers and employees. Because to have high standards, you have to be willing to enter the danger. And if entering the danger makes you feel like a pariah, after a while, you're going to go, that's just too much for me. And I think it happens a lot.
Especially if it's around, you know, like you said, passion for what we're doing, standards, like high, you know, the idea that we need to do this and it be urgent and excellent all at the same time. Whereas I think you're right. I think that some of those teams, those people self-select out, and then they're left with a bunch of people that like that side of the pendulum.
Right. And that creates its own culture of artificial harmony, which leads to politics, which leads to people getting hurt, which is crazy. Karen was saying something before we started today about we should really try to figure out what's in the bubble that people are silently thinking, even while they're nodding their heads. You know, we need to go, what are you really thinking? And this is an art. A leader has to be the kind of person who can go, I want to know. Leaders should reward people for saying things like, I'm sorry, that frustrates me what you just said. Or I'm sorry, I'm really disappointed in how things are going. Or, hey, you guys, I don't want to say this, but I feel kind of crazy. Am I the only one who sees this? Leaders should reward people for saying things like that in environments where people are usually don't. And I think that's the practical advice I want to give people, is that if you're going to meetings and nobody's doing this, there is a huge problem. The other thing I want to do, Cody, is I want to get back to my conflict continuum. So if people can remember, on one end of the line is artificial harmony. On the other end of the line is like mean-spirited attacks. And right in the middle is where you pass over from completely productive, constructive conflict to slightly destructive. The question I would ask a leader is, what do you think is better, being like 10 degrees into the destructive kind, where you're having all the productive conflict, but a little bit of destructive, or 10 degrees away from the artificial harmony? In other words, are you willing to receive and experience some destructive conflict in order to get all the constructive kind? And most people would say no. Yep. Any amount of destructive conflict is worth avoiding, and that's why I'll stay at that other end of the pool.
I 100% agree, Pat. And I think that's sort of the sentiment that we started with was, let's show the real ramifications and dangers of staying at that side of the pool. Because you think like, oh, well, on the other side, it's pretty obvious. It's like, oh, people get their feelings hurt, and then we have to have some uncomfortable like forgiveness conversations or whatever. At the other end of the pool is worse decisions, slower decisions, things that will never get done or pushed through with a level of like urgency and quality. You know, like I think about this all the time, Pat, where it was probably because you talk about mining for conflict. When you're in a room, we are human beings. We communicate both verbally and non-verbally, meaning right. I can read your body language when I think that you're thinking this idea is not a good idea. So in a room, I can sit there and say, hey, Pat, it looks like you don't agree. Can you tell me what you're thinking? Well, now we've shifted this entire meetings, a lot of us, to Zoom. And I've been on so many Zoom calls with people where their cameras are turned off or they don't seem engaged at all. And I can't even tell you how bad I think those meetings are and the level of decisions that are happening in those meetings because people are not looking at each other or mining for their opinion. And it's getting worse and worse as a result of the new context of work.
You know what I realized, Cody, talking about Zoom meetings? I meet so many people on Zoom when I meet them in person, I don't recognize them. And I know that it's like, well, that's because it's two-dimensional versus three-dimensional people. But it's weird that there really is, I think now that I've gotten so used to it, I've forgotten the difference between being with somebody in person and being with somebody on Zoom and how much richer it is to be in person. And that's why body language, facial expression, tone of voice, it just doesn't translate the same unless you're in person. Yeah. So conflict, remember, the best answers come from conflict. The worst politics and hurtfulness come from artificial harmony. And so we just want to leave you with that. It cannot be overemphasized. Okay, we're going to do a unpaid advertisement. We like to do a lot of fun ones. This is a very serious one. It's a movie, and it's called The Sound of Freedom. Sound of Freedom. And I saw it recently and I was amazed. It's about human trafficking. It's really well done. It's a fantastic movie. If it were fiction, you would say that's a great movie, although it's heavy, but it's a true story, a completely true story. It is so powerful and it's at the movies now. It took these guys 5 years to get it out. So please go see the movie. Take people to go see it. I actually can't believe this. Over the last 10 years, have had a chance to meet the producer and the director in different settings and a couple of the actors, which is the weirdest thing. I can't believe that. We went to see it. Fabulous movie. Really heartbreaking, but really well done. And so you're going to go see it soon, aren't you, Cody?
Yeah. I mean, you just galvanized me into it on this podcast right here. But yeah, after you and Laura saw it and you told us about it, we're going to go find a way to see it. I know it's going to be hard to watch because that's such a serious subject, but definitely want to go and support that.
But there is hope in it, and it is a positive movie in many ways. So when I say it's going to be hard to watch, it's not like all like that. It's so gripping, but it's so well done. So that's our unpaid but very earnest advertisement, Sound of Freedom. Okay, that's it today. Artificial harmony, not a good thing. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all next time on At the Table. God bless.